This is our number two.
It's time for the fastest 15 minutes in the news. This is Dory's Fastest 15.
It is a world of news in a tidy little 15-minute package just for you. Welcome to our Fastest 15. So coming up an hour from now, live, he's not going to back out, right?
I'm pretty confident in this one. He sounded pretty confident
earlier. Locked in. Okay. Because everybody's been quizzical about the video that shows Tim Iman wheeling an office chair out of an Office Depot. They allege that he stole it. The Lacey City prosecutor has now charged Iman with shoplifting. It's interesting to me, and this in no way excuses what Iman has allegedly done. But there are, somebody just sent me a police transcript from a large grocery store on Mercer Island where some presumed drug vagrants just walk in and take stuff, and the store doesn't file charges. They don't do anything. And I know that that's the case in a lot of Seattle grocery stores and other stores. Drug vagrants walk in, steal stuff, walk out. They have a no-chase policy. They don't even bother calling the cops because it happens so often. So we've got drug vagrants, many of whom have other criminal records, and they can shoplift with impunity. Iman's the one who gets charged with shoplifting. I mean, hardly anybody gets charged anymore around here. Now, again, that doesn't excuse what he does. I wish we would go after the drug vagrants who go in and grab a bottle of whiskey. But it's interesting that it's Iman who's the one who gets charged with shoplifting. So anyway, everyone's been curious about this. Everyone's trying to figure out what's going on. And we were told by his attorneys yesterday that he's not going to talk to the media. But then we heard from him this morning. He said he'll talk to us and to you. So 1 hour from now, he'll join us live and we'll find out what the deal is with the allegedly shoplifted chair from the Office Depot in Lacey. By the way, coming up at the bottom of this hour, I'm going to talk to a group that is filing a lawsuit against State Attorney General Fergie, saying that Bob Ferguson has been colluding with labor unions to skim money from the paychecks of people who are making $30,000 a year as home health care workers. And it is amazing to me that there still is this wild misperception that Democrats care about the poor and the working class, because Jay Inslee, Bob Ferguson, Mike O'Brien, Kshama Sawant, they consistently come up with schemes to screw over the working people because of their relationship with labor unions. And, you know, the last time Sawant came on my show, she hung up on me because I asked her about the fact that she, you know, decries the rich, but she stands on stages next to labor union presidents who make $180,000 a year. And I said, well, you say that you're against the rich, but you do the bidding of labor unions. How do you reconcile that? And she hung up on me because she had no response other than to just hang up the phone. I mean, that's just how ridiculously intellectually stunted she is, that instead of even trying to argue her way out of it, which she wouldn't have been able to, because I'm not the smartest guy in the world, but going up against Sawant, I'm like Stephen Hawking going up against her. So she just hung up the phone. So we're going to talk to a group that is suing Attorney General Bob Ferguson because they allege that he is colluding with labor unions to skim $1,000 off the $30,000 a year that home health care workers get from Medicare to take care of family members who are sick and elderly and ailing. It's amazing. It is absolutely amazing, the Democrat machine and how it is constructed to just rip off the poorest and the working class and the middle class people of this region. It is funded by just criminality. Details coming up on that at 1:30 this afternoon. Let's get into the Fastest 15. So we, after yesterday's session in Olympia, we have taken a step closer here in Washington to stay on daylight saving time year-round. They are having another public hearing this afternoon on this proposed bill. I don't know why they're doing this. I still have no idea. They say, well, people, they have accidents right before or right after we change the clocks an hour. And people are sleepy and all kinds of other arguments. I just have no idea. They say that there's more crime right after we change the clocks. And so Washington would be one of the few states. I know that Arizona doesn't have standard time. They're daylight saving year-round. I believe Hawaii stays in one time, or they don't move their clocks in Hawaii.
It gets kind of annoying. I've lived in Arizona for a while, during college, and that flip is kind of, it's annoying. I think we all need to be on the same clock, or we all need to be...
Well, the thing is, like, if there's a ball game on the East Coast that starts at 7 o'clock, well, you just know that Pacific time, it's 4 o'clock. But it's going to be 4 o'clock in California and Oregon. It's going to be 5 o'clock here in Washington. It's going to be confusing.
Yep.
I
don't like it.
I don't like it.
I just loaded some audio.
Reverse it. Okay, so here's State Senator Jim Honeyford talking about why we have to get rid of standard time.
Changing of times was detrimental to students doing testing during the week following the changes. More auto accidents, more heart attacks, and other health issues that occurred with this time change.
Yeah, but what about the six-month opposite when we get an extra hour of sleep? Are there fewer accidents? Do test scores go up? Are there fewer heart attacks when you get the extra hour of sleep? The whole thing's just, the things we focus on around here are absolutely bizarre to me. Next up in the Fastest 15, a 7-year-old boy decided that he wanted to help Donald Trump build a border wall. And so Benton Stevens, down in Austin, Texas, he decided to sell hot chocolate. He set up a stand, and any passersby could pick up a cup of hot chocolate, and he was going to send all the proceeds to the president to help build a border wall. And here is 7-year-old Benton explaining why he wanted to do this.
We were making a hot chocolate stand as against helping Donald Trump, and then I saw the State of the Union address and I wanted to help him.
He just said, Dad, I want to do a stand to help Trump raise money for the wall.
1,300 something, because I want our town to be safe.
He came up with the wording. He came up with the amount.
Some people were mad and calling me a little Hitler and stuff, and then some people were really happy.
We are obviously conservative.
Can you believe that? Some guy came up to this cute, adorable 7-year-old kid and called him a little Hitler. And I do believe it. Because the haters gotta hate, and if it means calling a 7-year-old kid Hitler because you disagree with him on a single issue, then that's what some people do. It's amazing.
calling me a little Hitler and stuff, and then some people were really happy.
We are obviously conservative, so we have certain news stations on, and he hears what we talk about at the dinner table.
Somehow it's gotten skewed to think that we're teaching our son to hate, and I don't understand where that comes from.
Well, I like all people.
I think it's important that they know what's going on in the world, where we stand, what we believe in.
Yeah, but the media contributes to that. If you don't buy in 100% to the haters' worldview, then you are a hater. I mean, they've just twisted things 180 degrees. And so Benton raised about $231 in just over an hour.
We're either going to mail it to Donald Trump, or we're going to go there and give it to him.
But CBS says, well, they don't even have a build the wall fund yet.
If you believe that you want to pay down the debt, you can donate to that. You can help save Social Security. You can give money to the national parks.
But in order to donate money directly to the border wall construction, Congress would have to pass a bill creating a fund to collect that money. A bill has been filed, but with Democrats in charge of the House, it's unlikely to pass.
They can't even keep the government open, let alone pass a law on something as controversial as the border wall.
Yeah, so the kids sold Nancy Pelosi marshmallows for 50 cents. They were normal-sized. And then he sold tiny Beto O'Rourke marshmallows. They were free. He would just include the Beto marshmallows. But he sold Pelosi marshmallows for 50 cents in raising money for the Prez. Speaking of adorable little kids, Manny Machado was the hot free agent on the market this baseball offseason. He's quite a slugger. And a lot of people thought the Yankees or the White Sox might get him. But Manny Machado signed a contract with the San Diego Padres. They're a bad team. But the amount of money they gave him is a record. 10 years, $300 million. And in baseball, it's all guaranteed. You know, football, you have to negotiate how much of your contract is guaranteed. But in baseball, it's all guaranteed. This guy's 26 years old, 10 years, $300 million. This little kid, he's a Yankee fan, and there were a lot of rumors that Machado might go to the Yankees, but I think this kid's happy that he ended up not going to the Yankees.
Manny Machado just signed a $300 million deal with the Padres.
Boom! I don't want the Yankees!
Why not?
I don't want anybody for the Yankees! I don't want Bogarts! I don't want Betts! I don't want Donaldson! I don't want any of those guys!
Oh, he's so cute!
You can take any other guy in the league. I just don't want anybody. I mean, you're not going to take a guy you hate from another team.
Hey, Brad.
It's kind of like taking Tom Brady from the Patriots and adding him to the Dolphins. It just doesn't happen.
I love the very end where he goes, just doesn't happen.
Doesn't happen. Yeah. So he says that he hates Manny Machado and he didn't want his favorite team to add Manny Machado because he hates him. So
I think that there are a lot of people that would not want. I mean, Tom Brady's the GOAT, right? Would we take him if something happened to Russell?
Sure.
But there would be a lot of people that felt like this kid.
Nah, Brady's fine. The thing about Machado is I've never been a big Felix Hernandez fan because I don't think Felix Hernandez is a great competitor. And when he re-signed with the Mariners, when they had no prospects on the horizon of getting to the playoffs, but they offered him a lot of money. And it always seemed to me that Felix Hernandez just wanted to collect a gigantic paycheck and play for a team where there would be no playoff pressure. And I've always felt that way about him. That's the way I feel about Manny Machado. Padres are horrible, and the Padres are not going to compete with him. And he just would rather collect because your life is not that much better at $30 million a year than it would be at $25 million with a contender. But if you don't want any pressure and you don't want to have to play when the bright light's on you, then you can collect the biggest money, never have a World Series in your horizon and just go through your career that way. And Machado's been in the World Series with the, I think, Dodgers, so he's doing, but $300 million.
It's just so much. I don't know how you use that, how you spend it, how you save it. It's so much money.
It's a lot of money. It's good dough. It's good dough if you can make it. Okay, next up in the Fastest 15, a 24-year-old. Boy, I hate this story. I hate how this story is covered. A 24-year-old woman left the United States to join ISIS 4 years ago. And in every story I saw about this woman today, it said she's an Alabama mother. An Alabama mother. Well, she's been married three times to ISIS fighters. All of them, unfortunately, have been killed. She got pregnant and had her kid after she left the United States to join ISIS. Now she wants to come back to America. And all the stories, an Alabama mother wants to return home. Here's Fox's Trey Yingst reporting on this woman.
This 24-year-old American woman who left the States to join ISIS just 4 years ago spoke with media outlets at a refugee camp in northern Syria this weekend. She says she wants to return home. Her name is Hoda Muthana, and she is the only American out of 1,500 foreign women and children who are living in this camp near the Turkish border. She traveled to Syria in 2015 and first lived in the capital of the former caliphate, Raqqa, where she married an Australian ISIS fighter. Muthana told The Guardian, quote, "I look back now and I think I was very arrogant. Now I'm worried about my son's future. In the end, I didn't have many friends left because the more I talked about the oppression of ISIS, the more friends I lost."
I say let her come back to America so we can try her for treason. And even though I have misgivings about the death penalty, she wants to go fight for ISIS. Let her come back to America and put her on trial for treason and either put her to death or lock her up for the rest of her miserable life. She told NBC she knows she's in trouble.
What I heard, if they were to read my messages, I would have been killed.
But this Alabama mother was brainwashed.
At first it was nice. It was like how they, showed it in the videos.
And she said that while with ISIS, she was forced to watch beheading videos.
I knew about those things, and I was okay with it.
But this Alabama mom, she just wants to save her kid now.
I don't want to take care of my child in this camp, because I'm afraid he might even die in this camp.
So she wants to come back to America. Yes, as long as a treason charge comes with her, that is your Fastest 15.
This has been the Fastest 15 Minutes in the News. Fast Stories, Fastest 15.
Give us 15 minutes, we'll give you the world. Coming up next, we're going to check the news for you. And then we'll talk to the organization that is filing a lawsuit against Attorney General Bob Ferguson because of how Ferguson is screwing over, in concert with labor unions, the most low-income people among us. Amazing details coming up next. I have long told you that I consider Bob Ferguson to be the most dangerous elected official that I have ever covered in my nearly 25 years on the air here, because he uses the highest legal office in the state to run a protection racket for the people with whom he agrees ideologically, and he uses it as a pit bull agency to go after people with whom he disagrees. And I don't think the law and the Constitution is very high on the list of priorities for Bob Ferguson. Well, now, one of the groups that he agrees with, labor unions, because he sees them as absolutely essential in his mind, inevitable climb to the governor's mansion. But now a lawsuit has been filed alleging that Bob Ferguson has been colluding with the unions. Max Nelson is the director of labor policy with the Freedom Foundation. He joins us here on Cairo Radio. Max, good to talk to you this afternoon.
Thanks, Dory. Happy to be on the program.
All right. Tell me about the suit you have filed. What is the grounds for your lawsuit?
Sure. So the Freedom Foundation filed suit last week in Thurston County District Court. This is state court. alleging that the Attorney General's office under Bob Ferguson has failed to comply with the state public records law by failing to disclose certain records that we requested of his office, and then highly redacting, over-redacting certain other documents that we requested that he did produce. And there's a little bit of backstory to this issue. Technically, this is a public records case.
Right.
But what's really interesting is the subject that the Attorney General's office is trying to shield from disclosure. This, by way of background, the state has about 40,000 folks who are home caregivers. They work most often for a family member who is disabled or elderly, helping them with the activities of daily living. And they are paid with Medicaid funds
right.
to provide that service to the client in their home. Well, these folks are all unionized. They have been since the early 2000s, represented by the Service Employees International Union. And for years, they were required to pay dues as a condition of employment. The U.S. Supreme Court struck that down, that requirement to pay dues down, as unconstitutional in 2014. And since then, the union has worked hand in glove with the state on a variety of workarounds to try and keep skimming that dues, those dues deductions out of the Medicaid payments that the state makes to these home caregivers.
Well, and let me interject here a little bit, Max, because I've covered this extensively, and I've seen the documents that were obtained through public records requests where Jay Inslee's office is directly colluding or acting really at the order of the labor unions in order to do this end around the United States Supreme Court decision. And I just, I find it reprehensible. We're talking about people who are taking care of their own family members. They maybe make about $30,000 a year, and now they have to fork over $1,000 of that to the labor union, even though the U.S. Supreme Court has said that is not mandated. And that's one of many ways in which our state government has been working with labor unions to just screw over. We're talking about very low income and working class income people.
That's completely right, Dory. And for somebody who's been working on this issue for coming up on 5 years now, I get lost in some of the details sometimes a little bit. You get outraged about the finer points of the arrangement of the scheme.
Right.
But really, at its fundamental level, that's exactly what's going on here, is a powerful political interest is working with state government to take advantage of those who are taking care of the most vulnerable in our state. And at that very basic level, it's absolutely reprehensible. When you get into the details of what's going on, it just it gets even more infuriating. So, as I mentioned, the state and SEIU have been working on a variety of workarounds. I won't go too far into the details
right.
there. But we started researching this issue from the federal perspective 2 years ago. And what we determined is that federal Medicaid law actually requires states to make the payment in full directly to the caregiver. They shouldn't be diverting any part of that money out of caregivers' wages to a union, a third party, that's not providing any services to Medicaid recipients.
Right.
And so the federal government now, based on some of that research that we've done, is taking regulatory action to put a stop to that. And so we submit regularly requests for public records to state agencies, including the Attorney General's office. And in one of these records requests that we had submitted, the Attorney General's office released several emails that were the contents of which were almost entirely redacted. But we were able to put the pieces together from the information that was disclosed to figure out that the Attorney General of Washington, Ferguson, has entered into a formal legal agreement with the Attorney Generals in Oregon and California and with the National Service Employees International Union, SEIU, and the National American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, AFSCME, to coordinate their legal activity to fight this federal regulation that would enforce federal law and prevent these states from taking dues money out of Medicaid payments.
Wow, yeah.
So we submitted some follow-up requests then to the Attorney General's office for more information about what does this coordination look like and what is the formal agreement that you all entered into to continue taking advantage of these home caregivers. And at that point, the Attorney General's office simply refused to turn over any of the documents, leaving us with no choice but to file suit in state court for violations of the public records.
And what they have provided you, it just sounds ridiculous, Max, that they They redacted almost everything with black ink, so you can see the salutation, you can see the signature, and everything in the body of the emails was just blacked out. Is that right?
Yep, that's exactly right. There might have been one sentence somewhere that was not redacted. For all intents and purposes, the contents of the emails were just blocked out.
And what is their explanation for, because that counteracts the entire intent of the Public Records Act. What's their explanation for blacking out everything in their communications with these labor unions?
So there are certain exemptions in the Public Records Act that allow certain information to not be disclosed. The Attorney General in this case is claiming that this relates to attorney work product. It's reflecting the legal strategy of the state for litigation purposes. There's a number of reasons why that argument doesn't hold water and does not shield these records from being disclosed. And even if the Attorney General's argument was correct, there's certain information that they couldn't justify redacting even under their interpretation of the law that they went ahead and redacted anyway. So again, we don't think there's any justification for withholding these documents. But at the very least, the documents were overly redacted. And then the documents that the Attorney General refused to release entirely, they could have released, redacted versions of.
Sure.
So they're trying to work any gray area in their favor here to prevent any scrutiny from coming onto this relationship that they've entered into with these national unions.
And so the labor unions, I'm trying to make sure I understand what you said a few minutes ago. So the way it's supposed to work is Medicaid pays the home health care givers who are taking care of their own ill family members. They're supposed to pay directly to the home health care givers, but the state of Washington and FCIU, they have rigged it so that some of that money is skimmed off and sent to the labor unions, and then the balance is sent to the home health care giver. Is that correct?
Correct. Unions are deducted just like taxes would be deducted from somebody's payroll. The caregiver never sees the money. The state deducts the funds and sends it directly to SEIU.
And that's a direct violation of the Supreme Court, in direct contradiction with the Supreme Court ruling.
Not so much with the Supreme Court necessarily. This is actually federal Medicaid law that was passed by Congress in the 70s.
Okay.
This whole arrangement was illegal even before the Supreme Court looked at it from a free speech perspective 5 years ago.
Am I exaggerating? Am I guilty of hyperbole when I say Bob Ferguson's the most dangerous public official I've ever covered? I know that's a matter of my opinion, but as somebody who's battling this guy, do you think the public should be nervous about the machinations of the AG's office?
I think definitely. I think that's absolutely right. The Office of the Attorney General wields a lot of power and a lot of discretion in how it enforces state law. Things like campaign finance law. There's a lot of gray area. Well, not gray area, but again, there's a lot of discretion that can be exercised on the part of the Attorney General that would allow someone who is so inclined to be a little bit easier about enforcing the law when violations are committed by people they like,
right,
and very harsh against people that they don't like when violations occur. And there's a lot of evidence that that's what's going on under Bob Ferguson in the Attorney General's office.
Now, these are scary times. All right, well, keep up the good fight. Max, I appreciate you explaining all this to us, and I appreciate you coming on with me today.
My pleasure, Dory. Thank you.
Max Nelson, he's the Director of Labor Policy for the Freedom Foundation. They've filed the lawsuit against Bob Ferguson, and I do think he is a very scary man in charge of our state's highest legal office. You can text me. The Online Trading Academy text line is 98973. That's 98973. Love to hear your thoughts, and we have lots more straight ahead here on the Dory Monson Show. One of the Democrat presidential frontrunners in 2020, Kamala Harris, she went on a radio show in New York City, The Breakfast Club, and she was asked about marijuana and if she supported legalization. And here's what she said.
Answer to this, too. They say you oppose legalizing weed.
That's not true.
I know.
and look, I joke about it, half joking. Half my family's from Jamaica. Are you kidding me?
They'd be so mad at you.
Right.
Okay. Her family's from Jamaica, so of course she supports smoking weed and legalizing marijuana. And, man, I tell you what. Here's a little more about her getting high.
Have you ever smoked?
I have.
Okay.
Like I inhale. I did inhale. It was a long time ago. But yes.
I know you have to go. They say you have to go. I just went to
I just broke loose.
I mean, was it in college? Uh-huh. See, I like stuff like that. That's a real honest ass deal. Was it a blunt or joint?
It was a joint.
Hey.
Yeah.
You remember the high?
I do.
So if it was legalized all throughout the country and medicinal, would you, you know, do it?
Listen, again? I think that it gives a lot of people joy, and we need more joy.
What does Kamala Harris listen to?
What were you listening to when you was high? What was on? What song was
Oh, my goodness. Oh, yeah, definitely Snoop. Uh-huh. Tupac. For sure.
Okay. And she was lying about that. Because she got her undergrad in 86, her law degree in 88, and Snoop and Tupac, they didn't release their first albums until 91 and 93, respectively. So when she says she was listening to Snoop and Tupac when she was high in college, she was lying about that. But anyway, when she was joking about, of course I smoked, and by the way, this shows just how square I am. When the host asked her, was it a blunt or a joint? I don't know. Do you know the difference between a blunt and a joint? I don't know the difference.
I don't. Honestly, I don't. But I
have no idea. Andrew, you know the difference between a blunt and a joint?
I happen to do. Well, so a blunt is when you take a cigarillo, kind of it's basically a really small cigar,
mm-hmm.
and you dump out the tobacco, and then you fill it with marijuana, and then you reseal it.
That's a blunt.
Yes.
Okay.
At least from my experience. And then a joint is where you take
experience.
Specific... Well, I mean from... I don't mean that.
Your knowledge.
Yeah, what you've heard.
What you've heard. That's what I meant to say.
Okay.
And then the joint is when you take, you know, rolling papers, right. Like thin rolling papers, okay. And then you... That's the difference.
I didn't even know.
You learn something every day.
I'm L7. But anyway, Kamala Harris's father is furious at her. He's he was a Stanford professor. He's retired. He's served as an economic consultant to the government of Jamaica and an economic advisor to two prime ministers in Jamaica. And he says that his daughter employed a fraudulent stereotype of pot-smoking Jamaicans. He said in an interview with a Jamaican news outlet, Kamala Harris's father said, quote, "My dear departed grandmothers, as well as my deceased parents, must be turning in their grave right now to see their family's name, reputation, and proud Jamaican identity being connected in any way, joking or not, with the fraudulent stereotype of a pot-smoking joy seeker in the pursuit of identity politics." So she's lost her father with this. Big Lead 2 coming up next. I'm in live.